And now on WRS, Michael McKay with the McKay Interview.
Hello, everyone. Whether you're a techie or a non-techie like me, a business person in the IT industry, or just in business and dependent on your IT systems for success, you cannot fail to have noticed that the increase in debate and comment, let alone the increase in new products and services in recent times, has been quite remarkable. Whether it's chat, GPT, gaming, IoT, or AI, what's new these days is always bewildering for many of us of a certain age, or fast approaching that certain age, when we observe the easy speed at which our children and grandchildren adjust to and manage new technology. I have a 10-year-old grandson, and I speak from personal experience as to how fast he is learning skills on his tablet. Today's interview is not going to be negative about new technology, but rather, with the help of a specialist, realistic about the direction we are going, the risks, and the opportunities. My guest is Dr. Ilya Kolochenko, founder and chief executive of ImmuniWeb here in Geneva, and we're sitting in the comfort of the Hotel Intercontinental in Geneva. He describes himself as a security expert and entrepreneur and leads a team of software engineers, data scientists, security analysts, and penetration testers. Although I'm going to ask him in the interview what a penetration tester actually is. But ImmuniWeb AI platform is an award-winning company and has received numerous awards and has clients all over the world. Now, Dr. Kolochenko's qualifications are impressive. His bachelor's degree in mathematics and computer science, a master of legal studies from Washington University in St. Louis, master of science in criminal justice, cybersecurity, crime investigation degree from Boston University, a degree, master of laws from the University of Edinburgh, doctoral degree in computer science from Capital Technology University, which I understand is in Maryland in the United States, where he's an adjunct professor of cybersecurity practice and cyber law. And I could go on. His qualifications are really quite impressive. And in 2017, he was named a thought leader by SC Media Reboot Awards. Dr. Kolochenko, Ilya, welcome to the McKay Interview.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me here today.
Ilya, it's really a pleasure to see you again. And I feel somewhat in awe sitting in front of somebody who knows so much about a thing that which I know so little. So you must forgive me if my questions sound a little bit naive and ordinary. But please, first of all, tell me a little about yourself, although we've known each other a few years, and a bit about your company, where you're from, and what your company actually does for people.
Sure. So basically speaking, I mostly have a technical background, and I've been practicing cybersecurity and cybercrime investigations for more than 15 years as of today. I also recently, like 8 years ago, commenced my studies in cyber law and privacy and data protection, and I believe that the future of cybersecurity will definitely belong to a fusion of legislation and technology. So I believe that it is important to have skills and knowledge both in cybersecurity and in law in order to deliver comprehensive solutions to your customers, not just technical solutions or not just in consulting, but to make sure that you technically protect the infrastructure, the data, and you can also support your customers and partners when they're trying to comply with the emerging laws and regulatory standards. I would say that ImmuniWeb, this is my second company, and our goal is to provide our customers with a peace of mind in relation to their application security. We are talking about web applications, mobile applications, cloud applications. So it's a fairly broad spectrum of different technologies. We also support our customers when they are doing dark web monitoring, to timely detect and respond to security incidents, data breaches, different types of online fraud, for example, phishing websites, whatsoever else. And today we serve over 1,000 enterprise customers from more than 50 countries, I believe. We are headquartered in Geneva. However, we have our people located across Europe. And I truly enjoy this global presence because my first company, from where I've successfully exited in 2019, we were delivering, I would say, human-centric services. And now at ImmuniWeb, we are enjoying this global presence. We are operating 24/7, and our customers can easily consume all our products and services with a couple of clicks with an iPhone or desktop computer whatsoever they have.
Okay, so it's an interesting phrase that you use there, Ilya, that your customers come to you for peace of mind. So they come to you for peace of mind, to use your expression, but also then to implement situations that will provide or take away the worries they have. So these are worries that they think are potential, or these are worries that are actual, or is it a combination of both?
I'd probably say that it's a combination of both, because we do have customers who are trying to proactively protect their infrastructure, their data. We also have customers who are looking for additional support when reactively responding to security incidents. We're trying to do our very best to support both types of customers.
Okay. Now, there seems to be, I emphasize the word seems, to be a heightened frequency in an increased anxiety about cyber threats. Now, is my sense of the current situation correct? And if it's correct, why is this happening?
I believe the first reason is that technology is becoming an omnipresent component of our daily life. And we have our data everywhere. Our kids are using iPhones. We are hosting in a very sensitive health data in our smartwatches. And obviously, you know, every single day, every single morning, every single evening, we are reading about new data breaches, security incidents. And I believe that it would be a challenge to find a single person in a developed country who has not yet suffered a data breach, not himself or herself personally, but because of one of the providers, one of the vendors that has been breached. So I would say probably it is also, you know, the trend that media are advertising, you know, security incidents in a very loud manner, in a good sense. So basically speaking, we see that everyone, you know, people of all age, people of coming from different social groups, people, you know, coming from technology and not technology, they are all becoming, you know, concerned about the increasing cyber threats that may impact their personal life, not just their employer.
Okay, well, let's just examine the different components of what you just said. What I'm interested to understand, I'm sure the listeners are too, because we have people listening of different levels of knowledge and expertise and skill. What are the key cyber threats to businesses and even ordinary people in Switzerland today?
I would probably say that the biggest challenge that we observe in cybersecurity is about managing cybersecurity.
Managing it.
Correct. Yeah. Because I would say cybersecurity per se is not that difficult, it's not that complex, it's not rocket science, okay? But the challenge is when you have different people in different teams frequently located across different offices, you have traditional, you know, a very well-known challenges of turf battles, you know, of internal competition, of conflicts over budgets, and you have to consistently, you know, and systematically allocate right people to do right tasks. And you also need to bear in mind that you have all these relatively novel trends like working from home, like your employees who are enjoying their privacy rights, but maybe, I would say, naively or accidentally misusing technology, you know, for example, taking confidential data to their home offices, or, you know, storing some sensitive information on their mobile devices. So the complexity is becoming, you know, unprecedentedly high. And also, I'd probably say that uncertainty, this is probably the key challenge for many cybersecurity professionals. First, because, you know, technology is rapidly evolving, cloud, IoT, whatsoever else. And also, you know, the regulatory landscape is another challenge, because every month, I think, we have at least, you know, several new data protection or privacy protection laws that are enacted by different countries. And frequently, it doesn't matter that you do not have, you know, physical presence in a specific country, like you don't have a branch office. It suffices, you know, to have customers in this specific jurisdiction, and you'll be required to comply with this regulation or law. And basically speaking, even if we talk about, you know, very simple concepts, for example, disclosure, mandatory disclosure of data breaches. Many people...
Of data breaches. So there's, you have to disclose this, even if you wanted to keep it to yourself.
That's correct.
In some jurisdictions.
I would say virtually everywhere.
I see.
Virtually everywhere. And I would say this is probably, you know, the biggest challenge today, because most executives and cybersecurity managers, cybersecurity leaders, they are perfectly aware that they have to disclose data breach, okay, both to the victims and to the competent authorities. The challenge is that they don't know how to do this, and they don't know when they are required to do this. And what I observe, you know, since several years, we have two extreme but incorrect approaches, okay, to disclose data breaches. First one is under disclosure, okay, when you're trying to conceal, you're trying to downplay, minimize.
Because of embarrassment.
Embarrassment, losses, yeah. You know, reputational impact, whatsoever else, yeah. And we saw that in the United States, for example, incorrect disclosure of a data breach, taking Uber's example in 2022.
Uber, the taxi company.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah. It can trigger criminal charges against cybersecurity executives.
As dramatic as that.
Yeah. And under disclosure can be, you know, a very dangerous and risky avenue. On the other side, I've been following some companies that significantly over-disclosed data breaches, because I would classify data breaches as a security incident, okay? And security incident can be anything, you know. Security incident is, for example, when you get a phishing email. Technically speaking, it's a security incident.
Which I seem to get more and more these days in my own laptop.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So we have thousands of security incidents every single hour, all companies, all entities. And that's not a problem, okay? Because security incident doesn't necessarily mean that some data has been stolen or some data has been compromised, you know, or destroyed. So we have security incidents, and then we have security incidents that are reportable security incidents that you are just required to disclose to regulatory authorities, and then you have, you know, security incidents most likely that have a lot of victims, and there is a foreseeable risk that.
But you're talking about institutions, organizations, not individuals.
Yes, most frequently, you know, legislation in relation to data breach disclosure, it's about, you know, businesses or organizations, also about governments. Partially, but right. If you are an individual and your mobile phone has been hacked, you usually do not have a duty to disclose unless you've been using your mobile phone for business. For example, you had a sole proprietorship company. So now to resume about disclosure, I would argue that many data breaches that have been advertised, you know, by companies saying, oh, we've been compromised, you know, change your passwords, you know, cancel your credit cards, you know, it's red light alert. They've been exaggerated, and we even, you know, witnessed several, I'd say, fairly interesting cases when companies made, you know, broad disclosure saying that everything is compromised without properly conducting an investigation.
And the motivation for exaggeration?
Fear of sanctions for non-disclosure.
I see.
So they loudly ring the bell,
wave the flag.
Yeah. Several weeks later, they disclosed that actually it was a false alert, that actually just certain customers have been impacted, not certain million. And several weeks later, once again, they make another correction saying that it was not certain customers, not certain million customers, but certain thousand customers.
And this happens quite often, does it?
I would not say that this is like a major trend, but we frequently see that victimized companies, they are stressed to disclose, to do something. And prior to conducting, you know, a comprehensive technical and legal investigation, they are rushing to disclose, to notify. And this is actually not what the legislation requires. The legislation requires you to properly investigate, you know, both technically to understand the scope of the incident, to understand what happened, to understand what kind of data has been compromised, and then to follow, you know, risk-based approach in disclosure. Because, for example, if only, you know, encrypted passwords have been compromised, you will probably have a very different mode of disclosure compared when your social security numbers, you know, any sensitive healthcare data has been compromised.
Yeah, I understand. Now, let me just go. I just want to leap a little bit further forward so that you can explain aspects of the sequence. There's a word, resilience. And I've interviewed people in your business before over the years, and that word comes up over and over again. And what I'm curious about is to know what resilience really means when it's used by a professional like you, like yourself.
I would say that in cybersecurity, resilience is a fairly broad and inclusive term. And many professionals and companies, they frequently have fairly different understanding of this term. In my opinion, resilience includes your technical and legal and managerial capabilities, okay, to prevent security incidents and disclosable cybersecurity incidents. I'm talking about data breaches that you must report and the matter of law. So prevention, but also, you know, investigation and response, because unfortunately some of the security incidents and sometimes even, you know, data breaches, okay, you cannot really prevent them with a 100% certainty. So capacity to timely detect, contain, respond. By respond, I mean to notify victims, you know, to assess the damage, to cooperate with governmental authorities, to make, you know, correct communications with media, to explain clearly, transparently, you know, without raising false alarms. Okay, so it's also about, you know, reactive capabilities, and most importantly, probably I would say about continuous improvement, though it's like, you know, tangential to resilience. But I believe that it is essential that all your proactive and reactive technical and legal and managerial and operational capacities, they should be continuously improved based on your experience and experience of others.
Okay, thanks. My guest today is Dr. Ilya Kolochenko of ImmuniWeb in Geneva, and we're talking about information technology, cybersecurity, risk, and what the future might look like. Now, Ilya, what's your assessment of the role in cyber attacks of organized crime? of enthusiastic and knowledgeable youngsters who are just mischievous but not necessarily malicious, or just corporate competitiveness, or even espionage and malfeasance? Just give us a sense of organized crime, young, bright people, and company spies.
That's a very interesting question, and I'm happy that you've asked it. I would probably say that the problem that I see in 2023, that amid the unfolding in a financial and economic slowdown, we see many bright, talented young people who are struggling to find a decent job, and eventually they are recruited by cyber gangs, however we call them, because cyber gangs can immediately pay you a lot of money. And even when we are comparing salaries from the top cybersecurity companies, usually major players from cybercrime, they can afford paying almost 10 times more.
A factor of 10.
Yeah.
Go on.
I would say if you attain a sufficiently high position within a cyber gang, for example, if we're talking about ransomware, you can easily make millions, and no cybersecurity vendor will have capacity to pay you such a salary.
So the temptation is huge. The rewards are big.
Temptation is huge, and I would say generally very few people would cross the line. But when young students, graduates, they cannot find a decent job for them, temptation is indeed, huge. And probably I would say we'll see many young, talented people who will decide to take, the other side, the bad side, because of economic stagnation. So I think that we have to think about implementing a national strategy in all countries, how to secure well-paid jobs for security engineers, security analysts, and also we need to carefully think about how to offer competitive salaries for law enforcement agencies, because the big challenge is that when you are looking for a job as a security analyst, for example, to conduct digital investigations, if you are comparing salary of a law enforcement agency, it will highly likely be significantly lower compared to private company. Okay, so law enforcement agencies around the globe, they are struggling to hire and to retain talent. So probably we need to consider a national strategy how to enable our law enforcement agencies to attract the best cybersecurity and cybercrime investigation specialists.
Okay, what are the trends these days that you as a specialist are aware of? We have artificial intelligence. We have IoT, the Internet of Things. These are all abbreviations that become almost part of most people's daily vocabulary, whether they're specialist or not. But they must encompass a wide range of meanings and many different facets. How can non-technical people make sense of what is happening around them? Or does the basic education need to be raised in these new areas for us to live more comfortably and more knowledgeably in this new world?
So I probably split my answer into two parts. Okay, I would say it is extremely important to introduce cybersecurity and technology education in schools.
Even at the school level?
Yeah. I believe that when our kids are 6 years old.
As young as that?
As young as that, because, cyber criminals, they start profiteering from a lack of awareness about the dangers of social networks. I'm not just talking about sexual exploitation of children, but also about harassment, about bullying, about many other hidden risks that can cause, or I would say almost irreparable emotional damage to our kids. So our kids should be trained, since very young age to understand this spectrum of risks and threats, how to respond to them, how to report them, because I'd say most of the kids, statistically speaking, who are harassed, who are intimidated, and who eventually commit suicides because of this, and something that their parents cannot timely detect, they are usually harassed by their classmates. So we need to explain to our kids how to report, because kids are usually abandoned and they have no recourse. They don't know what to do. And
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Carry on.
And they need to have, you know, a clear, understandable way what to do if you are falling a victim to online harassment, intimidation, whatsoever
else. I don't know if you're a family man, I don't know if you have children of your own, but do you know if this is going on in the school curriculum here locally in Geneva, in Switzerland, that young children are being taught as young as that how to deal with these situations?
I'm unaware of a nationwide program in relation to cybersecurity education. I'm not an expert in this area. However, I know that some schools, they're introducing, you know, classes or, you know, some courses where kids are trained about, you know, cyber risks, and I believe
quite young children.
Yeah, I believe that it can be different depending on the canton and school, obviously. I think this is where our government should probably, you know, allocate additional budgets, because today in 2023, I would say the broad spectrum of risks, you know, the most probable and also the most harmful, they're not really coming from the street, but they're coming from digital world. And even when we're talking about drugs in schools, for example, frequently, you know, drug consumption starts digitally. You join the Facebook group where other kids adults who are selling drugs, they are explaining how to consume drugs safely. They explain how kids and teenagers can safely purchase drugs. And this is something that our kids should know, that this is evil, that this is something that they need to understand and immediately report, because law enforcement, unfortunately, they do not have such advanced capabilities and budgets, you know, to proactively prevent such things. But when we train our kids to detect, respond, and report, I'm confident our cities will become significantly safer.
That's good advice, Ilya. Last question. What is your view about the sentiment expressed in an open letter from academics around the world and mentioned just this morning on the BBC Radio News, in which they say that it is no longer in the realm of science fiction to imagine artificial intelligence systems having feelings and even human level consciousness. I mean, where are we going with this, Ilya?
I think that that's an interesting point. However, I also believe that, you know, feeling is a very broad term. And for example, I think that I know when I feel something, okay? But I certainly know that I don't know how to measure and how to establish, for example, you know, that someone else is feeling something, because we can express, you know, some emotions, okay, like smiling or laughing, but whether the emotions are genuine, we don't know. So I would say first we need to define what feelings are and how we can measure them, okay? And then we can probably, you know, extrapolate this term to robotics. I think that as of today, no machines or AI or any forms of specific purpose AI systems, they cannot feel like humans, okay? But I agree that in the future, we may have, you know, machines that will have similar capabilities or capacities as we have, I don't think that within the next decade, you know, engineers will be able to replicate a human being. Though we will probably see robots that will be acting very similarly to us.
Okay, Ilya, it's been absolutely fascinating and informative talking and listening to you. Thanks for answering all my questions so clearly. And my guest today has been Dr. Ilya Korochenko, founder and CEO of ImmuniWeb here in Geneva. Thank you, Ilya.
That was the McKay Interview with Michael McKay. And don't forget, you can hear that interview again on our website, worldradio.ch.